notes if you want.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
The things you learn.
Here's the thing is that like this is very authentic, right? So if
you're
whatever
live,
it is you're gonna do.
You're live, by the way.
Oh, by the way.
It's gonna get real authentic real fast.
The fuck?
Have you guys been censored yet, by the way?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Episode 9. We didn't even make it 10 episodes. I think it was the 9th episode where YouTube was like, nah, whatever you guys are talking
about. Did it even make it to YouTube?
We should have started a betting pool to see like which episode
that would actually be cool if it was like a rolling thing. It's like it's been 7 episodes since we've been banned, so like the bets go up.
I think there's a card there somewhere, man. You take the over and the under, and
yep.
1 week or how many ever weeks you want. Yeah, that's starting
out. We should get in touch with DraftKings. We can set up a rake so that we can make sure that we at least get something out of it.
Andrew, dude.
There we go.
Congratulations on that tweet whatever that went absolutely fucking viral, dude. That went crazy.
Yeah, thank you. Did not expect that. So I think you got like 500,000 impressions so far, which hopefully we get some more veterans in the Bitcoin space through that.
No kidding.
Very good. Yeah.
All right, fellas.
I thought I was doing good at like a couple hundred, and then I came back and I saw the notifications keep coming through off my retweet, and I just checked back, and I'm like, oh, it's at like 3,000, or is it at 5,000 now? I don't know. Nice job.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Should I? Should we read it? Would that be too embarrassing on the show?
It's so embarrassing. Oh my god.
We should probably do it then.
Definitely do it.
Let's read it.
So since we're already live, we'll hit the intro here in a minute, but. Our guest tonight is Andrew Howard. Andrew is a force reconnaissance Marine. He is also the founder of San Mateo. Is that right? In San Miguel, the Bitcoin meetup. And you are the chief business development officer. Give me the name of the company off the top of my head because I forgot what it was.
Bitcoin Reserve.
Bitcoin Reserve.
So like Federal Reserve, but even better.
That's right. So in a viral and an extremely well written tweet at that, he put out, I guess it was early this morning, I guess, or maybe even last night, says a rant on the military and Bitcoin. If the military actually had righteous efforts, I'm pretty sure I'd still be in the Marines and would serve a full 20-year term. Jumping out of planes, shooting guns, suffering training with your bros and perfecting the art of being a warrior is unlike nothing else. I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss these things from time to time. It's a shame that this profession can't be pursued for honorable goals at this point. The enticement that any male with functioning testosterone levels has for these activities is virtuous. Men innately want to protect others and do cool stuff. Unfortunately, these virtuous desires are perverted by the military-industrial complex to get them fighting and dying for bullshit wars and globo homo. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but great word. Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler has two great quotes on this. Quote, I spent 33 years and 4 months in active duty service, and during that period, I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. I wouldn't go to war again, as I had done to protect some lousy investment of the bankers. There are only two things we should fight for. One is the defense of our homes, and the other is the Bill of Rights. War, for any other reason, is simply a racket. Smedley Butler was one of the most decorated Marines in history. They teach you about him in boot camp, but conveniently leave out the part where he got out of the military and became an anti-war advocate. Reasons like this are why I've dedicated so much of my life to spreading Bitcoin adoption over the last few years. I see it as an honorable cause and a bloodless revolution, which will ultimately free humanity from central banking. Bitcoin adoption puts an end to pointless wars, and it frees the common man from modern-day slavery, which is fiat currency. Bitcoin adoption has been my new mission in life. Under a Bitcoin standard, war would be very, very expensive, and the state would have to directly tax its citizens in order to fund war, instead of putting future generations in crippling debt in order to receive war spending immediately. Under the fiat system we are currently in, the state can use its monopoly on the money supply to fund any war it desires without the consent of the citizens. It is inevitable that a special interest and internationalists would gain control over this monopoly and use it to have other naive young men fight and die for their demented purposes. This must be stopped. And the only viable way I believe it can be stopped is through society at large opting out of a fiat currency and into Bitcoin. If nobody values their money, they can't use it to pay for pointless wars. They can print as much as they want, put it under a Bitcoin standard, and can't use what they've printed to pay their own sick and twisted goals. Under a Bitcoin standard, the state printing money to pay for a war would be the equivalent of me printing Andrew bucks with my home printer and trying to get everybody to accept it. It simply wouldn't be possible. Their money only has value because of our consent. A peaceful revolution is a lot better than a violent one. Bitcoin is the peaceful revolution. And what a kick-ass picture, man. What a fucking tweet, bro. That was badass. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans. Let's get the show started. All right. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. You kind of get the gist. We have a good time. We hang out. We interview amazing guys. This week, we have Andrew Howard, another reconnaissance Marine here in the house tonight. We just got done reading your first tweet, man. What a really cool way to celebrate the day. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Good to be here, guys. I know Gabe and I talked, what was it, like 3 months ago, Gabe? And you already worked with veterans, and we were talking about how there's such a good parallel between the mission of Bitcoin and veterans. And then, Shane, you're my first guest ever on my personal podcast. So great to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
We appreciate the join on the late notice after such a big day for you, man. What was behind it? I mean, were you just needing to get something out of your system and needed to put that out there for all the boys?
Yeah. So late notice is fine, by the way. Like I said, I'm currently injured right now, so I can't do jiu-jitsu. Usually I train jiu-jitsu when you guys record. So to answer your question, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll just have these spurts where I have to write down what I'm thinking. I'm sure a lot of you guys probably feel the same way. And I'll tell you, I've been working in the Bitcoin space for over 3 years now. And being in Bitcoin, that's just about the only job where I would stay sane working at a desk all day. So it's interesting. You have some moments where you do miss some aspects of the military, despite the fact that you hate much of it when you're in. I guess that was some of the motivation. I mean, it also really pisses me off seeing what is happening with our military right now. I think the military, you just look at the recruitment numbers right now, they're at drastic lows right now. They can't recruit people. Nobody wants to fight and die for fucking Ukraine. Or any of these bullshit politicians. I assume cussing is fine on this show, so I'm trying to handle my cussing lately, but I'm just trying to let it go here. So
we actually encourage it. We're trying to get rid of all the weak links here.
Fuck yeah! All right, let's do this shit. But it is frustrating sometimes because innately, like I wrote in that tweet, any man with functioning testosterone levels is gonna want to fight and protect people that they care about, protect their tribe and that's oftentimes why people join the military. Nowadays, a lot of people are joining the military for free college and all this crap, but you should be joining the military because you love your country and you love your people. But unfortunately, like I mentioned in the tweet again, is that virtuous desire is exploited. That virtuous desire to protect other people is exploited to go fight and die for central bankers, Lockheed Martin, military industrial complex, foreign interests outside of the U.S. So, yeah, that's some of my motivation for the tweet.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah.
I don't know what is more impressive, the badass tweet that you made or the fact that Shane, former Marine, could actually read all of that.
I don't know if you guys can see it, but I was sweating my ass off over here trying to get the girl.
Don't say the wrong word. Don't say the wrong word. Don't mispronounce it. Words are hard, though. I'll give you that.
It wasn't written in crayon, so I did have a little trouble, but I really appreciate it.
There was some crayon aspect to it. I actually had to correct a typo in that tweet, too. So there was some crayon-esque elements to that tweet.
I saw that follow-up tweet. I was very happy with that.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah. So Andrew, like, super curious, if you don't mind telling a little bit about your story, like your childhood, like why did you want to go in the Marine Corps? What was that like for you? Do you have any favorite stories from the Marine Corps? And then we'll talk about Bitcoin in a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Just a background. So the majority of men in my family were in the military. My brother was in the Air Force for like 10 years. Stepdad was in the Army for 25 years. He's a major in the Army. Uncle fought in the Korean War. I had a cousin. He was in the Army. He got a Bronze Star. Sal, he's a huge dude. He was a machine gunner. Uncle was a sailor. So the list goes on and on and on. And I hated being in school. I love learning things, but I hate sitting at a desk being told what I should learn. That sucks. That's kind of gay. So I didn't want to do that and figured I was next. So I joined the Marine Corps, first Marine in my family. I went in with a recon contract. I just figured if I'm going to do this thing, I may as well push myself to the absolute limit and see what I'm capable of and try and be elite. So yeah, did that. My class had an 83% attrition rate of people who either quit or failed. I graduated with a broken foot.
Damn.
Yeah, super motivated at the time, and I really believed in what we were doing. I made a lot of really good friends and friends that I still have to this day. But so that's kind of a background on on my history. I'm from Los Angeles. I don't know if that's relevant or what, but from Los Angeles, been doing jiu-jitsu for about 10 years, had a couple of May fights, and then did the recon Marine thing. And then I actually got out. I'm pretty sure I'm probably the only recon Marine who, I was battalion recon, by the way, not force recon. I wasn't super, super badass like Shane Big Balls Hazel over here. but I was probably, I'm pretty sure I'm the only recon Marine that got out as a conscientious objector. So maybe that's something we could touch on. It's pretty controversial there, but
I like controversy. Please tell
the story, because I think this is, I mean, to do everything that you have to do to become a reconnaissance Marine, right? Like it is, most people, you know, I think last week our Green Beret friend came on and he talked about everything you have to do to become Green Beret. It's very similar. It's a lot of stress, it's a lot of, you know, just tired, sore, achy, blood, sweat, and tears, and separate. I mean, it's hell on earth for a while. So this is, I think, a story that bears repeating so that maybe it inspires maybe even some guys that might be in right now.
Yeah, for sure it is. You don't hear about recon that much. You know, it's not like the Navy SEALs where you get like some, you know, you publish a book or whatever. Yeah, it's a bit different. It's a joke, right? How do you know if somebody's a Navy SEAL? They'll tell you.
They're going to tell their ass for sure.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, I was super motivated, wanted to be a recon Marine, did that, spent, 7 or 8 months in recon training. And then part of the workup after that, I went to like 7 schools or free falls here, airborne, Army Airborne is the most retarded school in the military, by the way. Foreign Weapons Instructor Course, Mountain Communications, so a bunch of schools there. And inconveniently, I picked up the book War is a Racket by Smedley Butler. And I mentioned this in my tweet, but you know, they teach you about Smedley Butler in boot camp. They teach you about how much of a hardcore badass the man was, and they conveniently leave out the part where he got out of the Marine Corps and became a very active anti-war advocate. Literally wrote the book War is a Racket, where he talks about war being the oldest trick in history, and how young men fight and die for the wars, and the old rich elite internationalists are the ones who actually profit from it. So that really just turned my entire world upside down. And after that, I read The Creature from Jekyll Island, which really turned my world upside down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I'm just sitting here in the barracks in Camp Pendleton, San Diego, just reading this. And it's like, holy shit, this is insane. And then I learned about 9/11. And, you know, I think at this point, nobody's going to think I'm too crazy for questioning the narrative on 9/11. But it's an extremely questionable official narrative that we're given, to say the absolute very least. And so a combination of all these things, just I just got to the point where I was like, all right, I'm not working for you fuckers anymore. You know, I'm happy to die for my friends and my family and my country. I absolutely love America. I love American values. I would still die for our country to this day, but that is entirely different than fighting and dying for the United States federal government at this point. That is an entirely different thing. So yeah, it sucks, man. I mean, it's recon, especially, I mean, right now there are, I believe, less than 1,000 recon Marines. It's a very rare job, and you are in a very tight knit community. So getting out, I got an honorable discharge, but getting out of, as a conscientious objector was a big oh shit moment for a lot of people in that environment.
Did you get guys asking you like, what the fuck, bro?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Hector, yeah, like, imagine. What's wrong with you? Like, what's going on?
That was part of the frustrating thing, man, is my commanding officer, who he and I were on good terms before this. I did what's called the recon challenge, which is like a 25-26 mile, you know what that is, Shane. Yeah, it's like a marathon with a 60-pound ruck on your back, and you do a bunch of shooting and stuff like that. I did that, got an award for that. You know, I was on good terms with the commanding officer at the time. And then when I became... Out. Yeah, right. And then when I became the conscientious objector, my entire company was told not to talk to me about it. So it's like, you know, and it only makes sense
They didn't want you spreading it like a virus.
Exactly, man. Yeah, because they know I'm not dumb. They know I'm not just absolutely insane. And you get somebody talking about Smedley Butler becoming an anti-war advocate, that's probably going to, quote, demoralize people. So, yeah.
Well, the crazy thing to consider, too, is like when you mix Smedley Butler's testimony, because he also, if I'm not mistaken, he called out, like, he was recruited to partake in an actual coup. And he went on television. He was like, no. There was a coup that was attempted, and I decided not to partake in it. You mix his testimony with like Eisenhower, and it's like, how have people not, like, I mean, I know how, because of the indoctrination system, particularly through the public education system, of just like with basic training. It's like, hey, these guys did all this cool stuff, but we're going to ignore the stuff that goes against the narrative we want to spread. But it's just like, we have the internet now, and I know you guys have all seen multiple passes of these videos of, like, particularly Eisenhower talking about the military industrial complex and just like how dangerous it is, that it's now to the point of where we can't control it anymore. And dude, I feel for you, man. Like, I didn't have to deal with, like, well, I was basically a conscientious objector, in the sense of like all of my unit was trying to get me to re-enlist. And I was like, no guys, like, I know. And it's not the same process, so I'm not trying to, like, affinity scam you, because that's a totally different thing. But, like, it's just, it is very disheartening how much of the U.S. military is just, like, they choose to remain actively oblivious to how the system actually operates.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've said this a lot before, but it's extremely ironic, because you raise your right hand and you swear an oath to yourself and God to protect and defend the Constitution. But how many, I'm curious, actually, what percentage of people in the military do you think have actually read the Constitution in its entirety? One?
I go with 1%.
Yeah, it ain't much.
Maybe. And that's the thing is, like, do they have a functioning knowledge of it? I mean, and that's the thing is, like, I feel like I'm that guy that can pretty much tell you what any article is and kind of the breakdown and the gist of stuff. And I guarantee you that is such a Asperger-y, autistic, like, thing that most of those guys in there, they weren't those guys, right? Like, they were just, you know, young guys who were like, hey, you know what? I want to do my family proud. I want to do the country proud, the community proud. I love, you know, my fellow human beings. If they weren't there for, you know, the free college or running away from problems, you know, those guys definitely hadn't read the Constitution. So yeah, to actually take an oath and not have any idea or any classes on the Constitution itself, it's kind of an
I was basically all those guys, Shane. I can tell you when I went in, I had no idea what the Constitution actually said. I didn't read it until I was well into, like, deployment, in all honesty. So, like, I would very much agree that it's at best probably 1%.
Yeah, and the thing is so many of them are just going to assume that the orders that they're receiving are indeed lawful orders until it's something that becomes too inconvenient. Yeah, they'll presume benevolence and lawfulness in the orders because, of course, you know, why would their NCOs give them unlawful orders or the officers appointed over them as well? Yeah, and it's interesting that they separated you like that, Andrew, because it's you know, sanity is infectious, and they know that. You know, once it starts clicking with somebody, they're like, oh, get them away from the rest, man, or the, you know, we're gonna lose control of the freaking nut house here. But it's fascinating to see the more veterans that that I meet that are Bitcoiners, to hear about their journey into, you know, being awakened, especially those that are still active duty, and how that journey plays out. Can you tell us a little bit about when Bitcoin became part of the picture for you?
Yeah, and agree on all fronts. So Bitcoin was a part of this process because after I read The Creature from Jekyll Island, I was like, wow, this is, our money is just fucked. and I was like, I'm going to buy some gold. So I was like, I don't know, 20 years old. And I'd go down in San Diego on the weekends to the bullion store and just go buy some physical gold and silver. and then I found out about Bitcoin during that time through Adam Kokesh, actually. I don't know if you guys know who that is. But he's also an anti-war advocate who's a Marine combat veteran. So, yeah, that was early 2017, luckily enough, before the big bull run at the time. And honestly, man, I had absolutely no idea what the hell I was doing. I mean, I'm happy I still have my private keys. So, or maybe I don't. Maybe I lost some voting action. But, plausible. You know, yeah. Yeah, right. But I had no idea about, like, self-custody and Bitcoin only. I mean, I had a shitcoin phase too, like 95% of people do who hold Bitcoin. So it was definitely a process, as I'm sure it was with you guys too.
Oh, yeah. Lost a lot of Bitcoin shitcoining, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least on the bright side, I met a guy at the San Miguel de Allende meetup that I organized. Met him last week, and he's this German guy. And he told me that he got into Bitcoin in like 2013. And the sole reason he did that was to buy stuff on the Silk Road. And he told me he snorted like billions of dollars. Yeah. He snorted literally like billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. Can you imagine?
Oh, God.
I would not be able to sleep at night. I would struggle with that.
Holding Bitcoin is more important than your drug addiction.
Billions worth for a couple hours worth of feeling good.
That's heartbreaking, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
When did it click for you that the bigger picture of Bitcoin being tied into freedom and its place in the peaceful revolution?
It's a good question. Frankly, around the same time I learned about it, because I was already aware of how fiat currency is exactly modern day slavery. That's what it is. I mean, we think slavery is just something of the past, but it's not. Fiat currency has no bounds between race or religion or any sort of differentiation between anybody. It is, in a literal sense, modern day slavery. So the idea of separating money from state and removing the ability for the state to just fund whatever they want and put future generations in debt, that actually clicked with me pretty early on. The only thing is, I wish I didn't have an altcoin shitcoin phase, but it is what it is, right?
Nah, so, it makes you more real, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
But I had a kind of a follow-up question with that, because you've mentioned some books that we've all here read and tied into this whole slavery topic. Have you read Confessions of an Economic Hitman?
Man, no, I haven't. I've had several people tell me that I should read that, actually.
You really should, because it reads like if Jason Bourne was an accountant. Like, it's actually very interesting. But like, because like, I wanted to add a point further onto the whole topic of like the fact that fiat currency has this modern day slavery dynamic. It's crazy to think about, like, when you look at how the U.S. and particularly China utilize our debt to enslave entire countries. That's the crazy part. And then we use those relationships and stir up cultural dysfunction to justify wars. And then that's where we use our military assets to go in and secure oil and resources and whatever, dude. It's like, it's just disgusting. Like, it's completely antithetical to be like I am personally of the, like, this has radicalized me in the last couple of years. I really do think that the way the US dollar functions and the way the politicians are using the money printer is completely anti-American.
Oh yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh man. Yeah. You and I, you probably have some thoughts on that too. I totally agree. Whoever's running the show right now is not, people think, I used to think we went to war in the Middle East for US oil interests and all these things. And I'm pretty sure the US oil reserves have decreased. So, I mean, it hasn't helped our situation with oil reserves or anything like that with the Middle East. So it's only hurt our country hasn't gotten better since we went to war in 2001, right? So yeah, I totally agree. I mean, whatever is going on, whoever's running the show right now is completely operating against the interest of your average American. But yeah, Shane, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that one.
I was going to say, you got a real easy pass with the easy conspiracy of knocking down the towers in 9/11. So, you know, maybe a tougher conspiracy question here. Do you think this is literally we're kind of in this silent war? I heard this term earlier today, like a silent depression. And there's this silent civil war going on in America right now. Where you know, I think as a military mind, you've seen it, you've been on the front lines as an intelligence gatherer, you know, how all of this stuff works, you know, the pre-planning, you know, what psychological operations go on, you know, what they do to environments, to utilities, you know, oil reserves, you name it. Do you see this as just, I don't know, happenstance of really, really terrible ideas, or do you think there is a concerted military-esque effort out there to take America down a peg, for lack of a better term?
I 100% believe it's the latter. I mean, it's not just a matter of these people being stupid. It's so much more beyond stupidity that is causing our country to be the way it is. I think it's absolutely intentional. I think if you want to erase national identity and have some sort of globalist system, then the number one biggest threat is the United States of America. That is a fact. In no other country do you have more guns than people. In no other country do you have people having this crazy communal reverence for the idea of freedom. You know, I've been living in Mexico the last over 3 years now, and I've traveled different areas of the world too. But I'll tell you, man, the ideal that Americans have for freedom is unlike no other country. And that has to be eliminated if you want to create some sort of global system. So I don't think it's coincidence at all. I don't think it's just our politicians are idiots at all. I do think there are a lot of useful idiots. I do think a lot of even Congress people are useful idiots, but they absolutely have handlers. And there's no way that any of this stuff could happen without the state having monopoly on money. And really, it's not even the state, it's the central bank. And nobody has any idea who the hell even owns the central bank, right? We can speculate, but it's like this weird public-private partnership, and there's so much ambiguity around it. So we absolutely need to evaluate the threat at hand right now, which I think is an intentional disruption of America and the West. And America is really the peak of Western civilization. And additionally, another the threat following that is the implementation of central bank digital currencies. So right now you have, I believe it's 80 or 90% of central banks globally who are either implementing right now or have plans to implement their own central bank digital currency. So love cash, hate cash, love fiat currency, hate whatever your opinion is, physical cash will be eliminated. Okay. I mean, that's not even a conspiracy theory. You can look at central bank reports on this. It is in the plan. It's going to be eliminated. Things are going digital. So that being said, if you value your freedom at all, if you want to buy things you want to buy without Big Brother telling you what you can and can't buy, without, you know, any of these restrictions from a tyrannical government, your option is Bitcoin, because cash is going away. And I'm a Bitcoiner. And I think cash is, for some things, it's very good, right? You should be able to transact with who you wish, and you should have the freedom to transact, just like you have freedom of speech. You know, you have freedom to say, you should have freedom to pay. So it's the same sort of idea. And I don't see any other valuable option for the future we're going into other than Bitcoin, given that scenario.
Dude, you need to read Confessions of an Economic Hitman as soon as fucking possible. when you do read it, you need to rant in my DMs about it as you're reading it, or if you listen to Audible, because like there's a part two, a recent edition for those who haven't read it or listened to it, where John Perkins talks about how he explicitly had an assassination attempt on his life, and he met with one of these assassins that he wrote about. And dude, it's a fascinating book. You got to check it out.
I gotta check that out for sure. I'm too busy right now reading about the health benefits of tobacco, but
let's go. Here we go. This is a fun story too, because we were down at I think it was Bitcoin 2022 in Miami. We ran into each other happenstance and went out for dinner with one of your buddies from Tennessee out here, another recon marine. And
who's that?
What was that? Oh, I just got some crossover. Sorry about that, guys. We had a little bit of a dinner there, and you pulled out some cigarettes, and you're like, "Hey, did either of you pussies smoke?" I was like, "What are you talking about, man? Nobody smokes in fucking America anymore. It's just terrible for you." And you gave me this really fascinating education on tobacco, man. So let's let it rip for everybody else here.
You know, it's funny because I've talked about this on a few podcasts now, and I think that the audience currently listening is highly likely to be the most receptive audience.
I'm interested. I want to hear this.
Yeah, let's go.
So, first of all, Shane, I don't think you had to deal with the same bureaucracy. But when I was in the Marine Corps, okay, back in the day, you had to attend tobacco class on tobacco, how tobacco is negative for your health. And I think it was 70% of the Marine Corps consumes some form of tobacco, whether it's chewing tobacco or cigarettes. Or
they did that instead of reading the Constitution.
Yeah, exactly. So if anything compels you to think that it could actually be good for you, then it's the Marine Corps forcing you to learn about why it's bad for you, right?
Exactly.
I'm not laughing at you. This is actually very, that's actually a fairly compelling argument just in itself.
Yeah. So I'll show, man, I've got so many points I can bring up. I'll put it as concise as possible. So I live in Mexico right now, and the Mexican government forces, do you see what that is? What is that image, fellow gentlemen?
It looks like dried tobacco. Like
it's actually a dead baby. Yeah, it's a dead baby.
For real? So,
yeah. So let me ask you a question. Seed oils, Coca-Cola, you know, all these, the alcohol, which I'm not even opposed to alcohol in an intelligent way, but all these things, right? Of tobacco, of all things, why not? Why do they do this with tobacco companies? Why don't they do this with, you know, I walk outside and you see so many fat people on the street. Why is everybody so fat? There's so many health issues people have, but tobacco, why, does the government really care about your health so much that they care about you getting lung cancer? They're going to force you to get some experimental vaccine that has no long-term testing, regardless of what your opinion is on it. It does not have any long-term testing. They're going to force you to get that. And the same organization is telling you that tobacco is bad for you. I'm skeptical of that. Human beings have been smoking tobacco for thousands of years. And if you look at the history of the anti-smoking campaign, it is extremely peculiar. So I guess one point is, can we take a guess of what year the anti-smoking campaign really began? Specifically, take a guess of what year advertisement of tobacco was banned in America.
I'm going to say 71.
Oh, I was going to go early 80s.
Yeah, I was thinking more like the 90s.
I have no guess. I have no idea.
1971.
Wow.
Fucking well, dinger, dude.
What
where's
the fuck
my, where's my badge?
1971.
Yeah. So that's interesting. You have Japan and Greece have the highest smoking rates in the world and some of the lowest lung cancer rates in the world. So how do you, how does that make any sense at all? Okay. Tobacco is linked with higher testosterone levels.
I have
the average smoker has about 13 to 15% higher testosterone levels.
Wow. It's a man, big there are deal so many... nowadays, dude.
Yeah. There are so many things, man.
Easy nowadays, right?
What was that?
I said, that's easy nowadays.
Yeah, that's easy nowadays.
Not everything out there is like wrecking dudes' testosterone. All the products, all the stuff that's in the food, everything.
Yeah. All right. Yep. It's like, is it intentional or is it just coincidence? I think it's probably intentional if you want a society full of docile people. So I don't know, man. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but I really do see a parallel between questioning the science, quote the science, and the science of the anti-smoking campaign. And you go back and you read the science from this stuff, and it's very questionable. I have a book, I posted it on Twitter. It's called Smoking is Good for You. And it's written by a medical doctor from the 1980s named Dr. William Whitby. And it's pretty compelling. And he writes about a lot of this stuff, and he's got a ton of studies that he cites, and it's a very compelling book. But I do see a lot of similarities between the COVID scenario and wanting to control other people because of their medical choices and the anti-smoking campaign. So that's my tobacco rant.
It's a solid rant, dude.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's really
so. I've got a question for you then. Following up with that. Why are you smoking Camels instead of like American Spirits, which are just like straight tobacco and water?
That's a good question. I would smoke American Spirits that are not accessible in Mexico, unfortunately.
Wow.
I'm planning on moving back to the States within the next year, but they're not accessible right now.
Yeah, that's a fair answer.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that. So American Spirits are just plain up tobacco. There's nothing.
Dried tobacco. Yep.
And so with everything else, I mean, those Camels you're pulling on right now, like no worries about the additive chemicals and everything else they're throwing in those guys.
Listen, man, my grandmother, my grandmother is 89 years old. okay? She's a fucking old ass lady. She's 89. She's been smoking Marlboros her entire life since she was 16. And she's
reds?
Still here.
Are they red, okay? Too?
Yeah, they're Marlboro Reds, all right? You go to the gas station, you buy
it. Yeah. And I'm going to just throw this in there. I have been hearing more reports that that genetics are actually a bigger factor when it comes to things like lung cancer than lifestyle choices. So, and I haven't dug deep into the data. Don't know how that works, but I will say that, you know, when governments get behind something so strongly and they regulate something so heavily, it certainly should lead us to question what their motivation is, because they are sure as hell not doing it for us. They definitely do not care about our health. And I think that's evident in just about everything that they do. And so they're not regulating tobacco and putting scary pictures of dead babies on cigarette boxes because they care about our health, or babies because they do not. So that cigarette does look pretty good over there, Andrew. Can you pass me one through the window, man? We're sitting right next to each other here.
Oh, I'd love to, brother. I'd love to.
Oh, but you'd made a post about this, I think within the past 24 hours sometime, about tobacco, you know, being some pure signal or something like that, and cannabis being kind of a shit coin. And I'm going to take a little umbrage with this. It was like the idea that cannabis is a shit coin and makes people lazy. Could you do me a favor and expound on that just for everybody's entertainment?
It's a fun conversation, gentlemen. Okay. So I should start off by saying I'm not some angel, and I've had different experiences, of course. Okay, so
you're, it's funny, okay, here,
when
man.
You get out of the military, it's like, well, I'm so, yeah, when you get out of the Marine Corps, it's like, wow, I have so much freedom, right? So, you know, I'm not naive to that. You know, I mean, why is weed getting so popularized now? Why is it that when I go back to my hometown in Los Angeles, I can literally find a weed shop on every block, but tobacco is continually antagonized? That's a little odd. I can tell you from a subjective point of view that I think if you have a society full of men who communally drink together and smoke tobacco together versus a society full of men who smoke marijuana together, you're probably going to be a lot more concerned about, you know, an uprising or some sort of freedom revolution like our founding fathers had if you have the alcohol and the tobacco combination, right? So there's that. I mean, the Marine Corps is born in a bar, right? And I was born in a bar. So it's pretty interesting. But I don't have as many talking points on the marijuana thing as I do about tobacco, but I am very skeptical of why it's so popularized. It's just odd. Like, why does tobacco have so much antagonization versus marijuana? So I wish I had better talking points for that one, but it's more subjective.
Yeah, no, I just kind of was like, well, shitcoin, because it makes people lazy, is one of those things where I think lazy people get lazier and more productive people can get more productive, depending on what it is, right? Like it's I don't think it's for everybody. Like, I don't think, you know, tobacco or, you know, alcohol is for everybody, right? I think you've got a really healthy point there where if you got a bunch of guys who are full of testosterone and some alcohol, they're probably going to do some really stupid shit once in a while. I mean, look who we used to hang out
for.
Yeah, I mean, what do you guys want to do? You guys want to strap yourselves to a rope and hang beneath this chopper for extract? That sounds like great. Hey, we might even be able to do this thing called a sky hook and get somebody, you know, fixed up here. So, like, I'm absolutely to your point. I think guys might be a little more adventurous, brave or stupid, you know, very fine line there with those two chemicals in them. But I don't think that cannabis is a shit coin. I think it's got some real medical purpose out there, and you know, like I said, not for everybody, but I definitely know that it doesn't always make everybody lazier. There are some guys that will, you know, happily, you know, partake, and it calms down a lot of the issues they have in terms of pain. So they can maybe able to go, you know, get after it again, work out, start, you know, focusing on something, do, you know, creative collaborative efforts and everything like that. But, you know, I guess my cannabis commercial is over, so we can move on.
Well, I think I was going to add, I think like what we've been experiencing with why so many people have been so hyped over cannabis for the last like what decade in particular. I think it's just a natural mechanism of the prohibition of it. Cause like, I think like, if you look at the prohibition of alcohol, I think like the last few decades, cause it's been quite a few decades. I think it's just been a continued, almost like multiple waves of people just like going out and be like, okay, well, it was demonized for so long. Like, I'm just going to like go out and like have fun and just let loose. And then the really negative aspect is the people that never grow up and grow out of it, which has been interesting, because it seems like going back through history, it's like the prohibition, and then you kind of rise up into the 60s and 70s, and like you get all like the free love movement, whatever you want to call it, free sex movement, sexual revolution, where there was a lot of like illicit drug use and expanding of the mind and consciousness and everything. And then everybody kind of like reverted back into tobacco and alcohol. And then like now we're seeing the kind of rise back into specifically cannabis and mushrooms. It just seems like it's a natural kind of development to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the hippie movement was a total product of CIA manipulation, but that's a different story. Right. You know, the only good thing the CIA ever did was produce music. So.
God, they did have some good music, didn't they? Oh my God,
love the Doors, bro.
Isn't that sad though? Like when you go back, you'll get MK Ultra. You're like, dude, they did so much bad shit, and it's like they did all this bad shit, and then it resulted in a lot of like the expanding of the mind and like all this quality, like really great what we now call classic music. It's like, damn, we have to thank them for it too. Fuck, dude. Like,
see how he's aspects to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem I have with any types of those prohibitions, and then the lifting of those prohibitions, is that to me it's an illusion of them granting us freedoms that they never had the right to take away in the first place. I mean, enacting the alcohol prohibition was bullshit, and you know, making marijuana illegal or anything else for the fact of that matter. I've always had problems with that. But the thing is, then they grant it and they say, hey, look at what we've done for you. Look at this freedom that we have given you, which it was never really theirs to take in the first place. And now it's being used as leverage to win votes. And it's also, I believe, being used in a way to pacify people into believing that, hey, you know, the government's not that bad. Hey, look, they made it legal for me to smoke my weed. I don't think that the laws were really, I mean, if somebody really wanted to get high, they were going to do it whether or not the government was going to let them. But now they can, you know, they can say, hey, look at my state. You know, it's not so bad living in this state, which is a total fucking disaster, because, hey, you can go get pot over here. But I mean, I've lived in a few states and I've known people that could find it in any of those states, wherever they've lived, without having this illusion of being granted some great freedom to finally be able to live your life and not have to worry about it. Again, when the government's behind it, when any government is behind something like that, it should lead us to question, okay, what the hell for? And I do believe that there are, you know, in general, I agree with your statement, Shane, that, you know, for some people they can maintain high levels of productivity. It can be therapeutic for a lot of people. At the same time, I think that in general, mass population and heavy consumption of marijuana makes people lazy. And I believe there are exceptions, I don't want to upset anybody who's listening, but I have heard some reports and seen some studies that certain types of marijuana do amplify more feminine qualities of male psychology. So just going to put it to you like that. I mean,
smoking weed makes you a bitch.
There you go. I didn't say it, but you're the guest, so you can say what you like. But
put it on a soundboard.
Yeah. But look, man, I mean, I don't want to like blow your mind too much here, but when you look at, you know, all of the garbage that people eat, that, you know, specifically men, I mean, when you look at what the consumption of microplastics is doing to men, to our physiology, in general, I mean, it's driving down testosterone levels. You're not allowed to be masculine now. If you are, then you're toxic. There is no question about it. There is a concerted effort to drive that down, to push men down. We have generations of men that are being raised by women in the schools, which, you know, thank God for, you know, for the people that can do what they do. But the fact is, you know, there's an effort to drive that down. There's an effort to keep that down. There's a reason why you're a freaking extremist Nazi now if you like to work out too much. I mean, it's all, and I'm not going to get too big on the whole thing, but it wouldn't surprise me, man. Okay. Anything that they do, I'm going to repeat it. It's not for our fucking good. I can tell you that much. And it's part of something else. And it's like you said, Andrew, yeah, some of it, there's a lot of useful idiots out there that are just, you know, they're part of the process, but there are other entities out there and people that, and forces, if you will, that want things to go in a certain direction. And they certainly have their influences out there that are doing things. But anyway, yeah, sorry. That was my little micro rant for you.
Yeah, it's a fact. Yeah.
So Andrew, I was gonna ask you, unless you had more to comment on there. Alex had brought this up early on before the show started, as far as like some of the guys' favorite stories, whether they're funny or not. In the military, do you have any stories like that? Do you have any funny stories that you like to tell? Do you have any like favorite badassery stories? Do you have a mixture of the two?
Think about it for a second while I do a quick announcement, right? Because nobody likes to be put on the spot. This is Bitcoin Veterans. We try to do this every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern live. This is on Twitter Spaces. It is Twitter. It is YouTube. I think it's even roaming around out there a little bit on the old Facebooks. But if you love it, go out there, subscribe, smash the like button, get notifications, and help us out. Spread the word. Bring a battle buddy once in a while, maybe a beer, maybe a blunt, maybe some tobacco, whatever your drug of choice is, right? Show up and help us out. If you are in the audience out there on Twitter Spaces, you want to come up and ask questions, start getting you guys in the queue now, as we've got a little over half an hour left in the show. And if you want, you know, you can ask questions to myself, Mike Hobart, Alex, Gabe Lord. Right now, Jordan is not with us tonight, so you can't ask him anything. But Andrew is our guest. He's a Marine. He's Battalion Recon. And, you know, he's done some really impressive things. So I will be taking those guys in the queue in the meantime. Did I give you enough time for a story?
Dude, that is such a hard question.
See, that's what I said. That's what I said earlier. And like everybody was ridiculing me for it.
Can we go back to that?
Most memorable moments.
Yeah. What's that, Alex?
Damn it, Mike. Why didn't you ask me an hour before the podcast?
Yeah, I know. I should have. I fucked up on that one. Well, we could have one of these guys share one of theirs.
Well, I think, you know, if you think back to anything amphibious, there's got to be something.
Amphibious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you spend a ton of time in the surf doing some bullshit. You spend tons of time on, you know, with a pack on your back, rucking around, doing that kind of dumb stuff. You know, fast roping is always, I don't know, somebody always gets stuck or something, or, you know, nothing ever goes to plan. And I think that's one of the best things, because there's always an insertion, there's the mission, and then there's the extraction. And somewhere along the line, something always fucks up. Like, and you've always got that one guy who, you know, you can count on for a great story.
All right. You just made me think of something. So,
there you go.
Yeah. I had this, roommate. I won't say his name, but he's a big Mexican dude. He was like 6'3", you know, 250, just. I'm 5'7", 145 pounds. I'm a man of small stature. Okay. So me and this dude, we were like, you know, roommates, just good friends. But at Airborne, you do your first jump, right? So Airborne, Army Airborne, basically if you're Marine Recon, you have to go to Army Airborne school. It's the dumbest school ever. It's like 3 weeks long. It could take literally 2 days, but it's 3 weeks long. You know what I'm talking about, Shane? Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, so during the first jump, one of our friends dared our Mexican friend, big dude, to do a dab out of the airplane. So, you know, you jump out, you do a dab. So Jesse did it. Jesse jumped out of plane, did a dab. And it fucked him up big time. So he I guess the direction of his arms or something was happening. I mean, you're on a plane flying really fast. So his arms spun around really fast. And he landed in a really bad way. You're supposed to fall and roll the way you land. And he fell and he broke his ankle really bad.
Ooh.
And so anyways, and that was around the same time that I got into battalion because of my broken foot. So anyways, that's one story. Jesse and I for 2 months, 2.5 months straight, we were both on crutches, this little white kid and then this big Mexican dude, you know. So yeah, just that's one.
Going around dabbing at each other on your crutches.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. And then we went to Airborne together at the same time, and he finally got his wings. So, yeah, good memories.
Well, I'm glad that, you reaffirmed my position as far as, those guys brought it up to me. And I'm like, dude, I don't know, man. I remember the badass stuff or the stuff that I learned that I thought was, cool. But as far as, the I don't really remember a whole lot of funny stuff, you know? It's hard to think about.
It's probably because there was too much alcohol at the time. I don't know. Good stories. Shane's a good storyteller. I don't know if I'm
Shane is a very up good to
par with that man. Yeah.
It comes from I keep talking about this line between stupidity and bravery, and it's just it's hard to tell. That's why life is hard, right? Is because it's very hard to tell sometimes, but. I don't know. I was telling Mike beforehand, there's a book that I started writing a long time ago and started filling out chapters. Our slogan or whatever the motto, the Jack and everything else over there at Reconnaissance was swift, silent, deadly. Right. And what I labeled the book, what I started writing was swift, silent, hysterical or hilarious, because every time you went and did something, you know, the clowns you're with, you got to have clowns that will cut the tension, you know, no matter what you're doing, because you're doing some of the craziest, most, I don't know, death defying dumb shit you could possibly do. And, you know, the idea that you have to go to a tobacco class and when you're going to get shot at or blown up and, you know, whatever it is, just like, yeah, I think I've chosen a pretty fucking dangerous profession. You know, I don't, if it's the tobacco that takes me out, you know, that levity to be able to, you know, have an experience and share a story. Like, I'll give you guys a quick one. We were some of the first guys into Fallujah. We did all the Northern Reconnaissance in November of 2004. Right. And when we were over the tracks and the way Fallujah set up, everything is below the railroad tracks. There's a train station out there. There's an apartment complex on the northwest side. And the Euphrates River actually takes a bend up to the north on the western side before it juts south. And that area is, you know, south of the train tracks and around the Euphrates. It doesn't look like Iraq. It doesn't look like a desert. It doesn't look like a shithole. It's actually got some really beautiful properties, you know, right there on the river, palm groves and everything else. And so we were sent down the night before, and, you know, our captain was like, hey, you know, we're going to go do the reconnaissance. We're going to laze the railroad tracks tomorrow so that we can, you know, have the JDAMs come in. And we, you know, we're like, shit, yeah. And then they said, and there's nobody that can come get you if shit goes sideways. And we're like, oh, this is gonna be a fucking great mission, right? Like, this is right home about. So we're excited. We get down there into, you know, this plane, and there's channels for water that are, you know, probably 12 feet across, maybe, you know, 15 feet deep in some places. So you don't want to fall in. You got a pack on and everything else. And it starts to fucking rain. Like, it's November in the desert, and now you're starting to get rain in the middle of the night, and you're trying to navigate these fields and irrigation trenches. And as we're doing this, and there's a feint, which is a false attack going on in the peninsula, they start getting, you know, AAA fire, like anti-aircraft fire, from just not far from where we're at. So we're on the radio with the Cobras that are doing the feint on the island and all that fun stuff, stacking up air, getting ready to go. And we are no more than maybe 50 yards away from about, I don't know, 50 dudes. And, you know, we've got three teams of about six guys, you know, roughly. And so those guys came back on. The Cobras disappeared, but they came over the radio and they're like, you guys need to get your beacons on and get real small right now. So they, you know, they come in, they do a couple passes, eliminate most of the threat, but then they came back on and said, hey, listen, they're organizing not far from where you guys are at. They're around the canals where you guys are. You guys need to get north and get over those tracks like right now. So we're like, shit, man, that blows our entire night. You know, we've had brass raining down from us from these Cobras, and you know, we got to march back through, try not to fucking fall, you know, do these gymnastic things where you're balancing on a slippery pipe, crossing these things with shit on your back, carrying God knows how much weight, and you're like, your mood is absolutely ruined at this point. So we cross over, you know, there's lights, you know, in the sky from artillery kind of lighting up the battlefield and all this other fun stuff. And as we are coming back, man, it is wet. Like the mud and the sand have made this like this gelatinous, really slippery, I don't know, concoction on the surface.
Did you describe it as moist?
It was super moist. and without missing a beat, you know, right when you know, everybody's just pissed and fuck this and fuck every, you know, like you're at that point in the mission, man, I slipped and just took a shit, you know, sandwich, like just right under my side, right in the mud. And we're still not in an area where you could be loud and laugh and have a good time, but I definitely hear my buddy, you know, Mike behind me just, you know, laughing like deputy dog going, cracking up. Oh, man. I guess I'm glad I could be the butt of a joke tonight to make guys laugh, but man, what a shit night that was.
Andrew's right. You do tell great stories.
Yeah, it does. Good story, man.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
It would make a good movie scene too, the way you described it.
Oh man, that's maybe something people don't understand either. Like when you're seeing all this combined arms effort come together and you're literally taking down a city, man, what you're experiencing in combined arms, the colors, the smells, the, you know, the sounds, you can't.
Shockwaves.
It is really hard to put into words because you're sitting there going, what on earth? All your training will never ever prepare you for that type of a situation where you're actually going live in a place like that. I mean, it looks like the 4th of July on steroids every night you're in that zone. And it is crazy because not only do you have like the 4th of July on steroids, but you've also got, you know, aircraft 24/7. Like it doesn't matter if it's fixed wing during the day or if it's got, you know, the AC-130s at night, you know, A-10s, Cobras, Apaches, and they are all working all at the same time, all night long, in conjunction with things like artillery that are coming in to the city that are doing target softening. It is fucking terrifying, and it is a spectacle to behold. Like that's why, you know, 4th of July, you're just sitting there going like, I'm glad the kids like it.
Well, I haven't even experienced like that kind of stuff, but like I have the same position as far as like 4th of July goes. Like people want to go watch 4th of July fireworks. I'm like, well, it's the same thing every year for your entire life. Like, why? Maybe go blow up some thermite or something on your, like with some buddies or something, but like 4th of July is just dumb in my opinion.
Maybe
the fireworks, not the holiday, people. Don't get triggered.
You don't have any freedom. What the fuck are you talking about? It's okay.
That's fair. Hey, still fun to blow up some thermite.
Yeah. What in terms of Bitcoin and this move towards freedom and this patriotism, you know, that I think that most of us obviously had from the very beginning. How do you see Bitcoin, you know, coming in and especially in this group of veterans, recharging these guys, giving them purpose and mission?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I think what you guys are doing with Bitcoin veterans is very good because it's I've talked about this with Gabe a lot, but there are a lot of parallels between being in the military and being a Bitcoiner. I mean, one of them is suffering with other like-minded people. So it's a different kind of suffering, of course. Like what Shane is talking about is entirely different than holding on to some magic internet money when it goes down 80% every 4 years. It's vastly different, but
yeah, it's still pretty emotional.
Yeah, it's still pretty emotional. Yeah, so there is that kind of parallel of being ideologically motivated with other people and going through communal suffering with them. And so that's there. And the other, I guess one more is Bitcoiners, I think, are a little bit more disagreeable by nature. And people in the military are...
Yeah.
Some are, some aren't, but I would say a lot more are disagreeable. So you have that element as well. And Bitcoiners for sure are, because people think you're an absolute idiot for 3 years, and then for 6 months to a year, they think you're a genius. So so there's that. But and then plus, you know, this whole idea of American ideals. Bitcoin is American. There is... The United States dollar in its current form is not American. I've got "And the Fed" up there by Ron Paul, and Ron Paul talks about this. But in Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, it says that our money needs to be in the form of gold and silver in some way. So I'm totally paraphrasing that, but basically our money needs to have backing from gold or silver. And that is not at all what we have today. So the United States dollar in its current form is unconstitutional, and it is anti-American. And that's why we have gotten to the point where we are, because our founding fathers knew the dangers of central banking and fiat currency. Thomas Jefferson, I believe, actually said that. What do you say? Shane, maybe even take the words off
my language.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson, well, he had a lot of amazing quotes, but when he talked about the central bank, it was the number one issue for Thomas Jefferson in terms of a way to weaken a nation or to centralize power for tyrants. Like I'll find the quote for you, but you're 100% spot on. Out of all the founding fathers, he was the opposite of the Federalist. You know, there's a reason why they exported Jefferson to France to be the Secretary of State during that time. It's because if he would have been around inside of the States while they were discussing a lot of this, he would have been like, no, there's no way we should be centralizing government, especially with these clowns over here. You know, especially what Hamilton, you know, Hamilton being the big banker, dude, that would have never flown.
Yeah, 100%.
That is crazy. I did not know that they exported Jefferson for that. Like you learn all these little tiny things about history, just like going back through, like Creature from Jekyll Island is another great example. It's like all this sneaky shit that they did to pass some of these like legislative or executive like just moves. Just, man, it makes you really frustrated about like the American education system in general.
Ugh. Oh man. Yeah, don't even get started on that bad boy right there. Yeah, but I agree with your statement there, Andrew, that I mean that it, by its nature, you know, there has been no concept of freedom like the American concept of freedom in the history of humanity. And it has gotten to the point where American freedom is not even bound by geography anymore. It's a mindset, and it's a philosophy, and it's a state of mind and a state of existence that is it has the potential to encompass the globe now with Bitcoin. And that's the awesome thing that it brings, is it brings that freedom to everybody in the world, that American concept of freedom. According to its original design, that is the true power of the attraction of Bitcoin, I believe, to military veterans. And it's, you know, I've been looking for the best possible way to support veterans on their way out of the military and post military. And it was really one of my early conversations with Bitcoiners who are veterans was with you. And that's, you know, and that's where I saw that real alignment taking place was in our conversations. And that I mean, that's when it freaking hit me. It's like, dude, this is perfect. This is perfect for veterans to get in on. This is the perfect mission for veterans. And then to see how it continues to grow and how it continues to just attract the high caliber of individuals that are getting on this mission, it's just fucking awesome.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's weird when you get out because you don't you have nobody telling you what to do or what to wear, and you don't have the feeling of camaraderie that you did. And it's a huge culture shock for sure. So I think this idea of Bitcoin veterans is an important one. It's a noble mission too, and it's a patriotic thing. A lot of people think Bitcoin is anti-patriotic, but I think Bitcoin is the most American thing ever. It's like, you heard the phrase Bitcoin is as American as apple pie, and I totally agree with that.
It's a fascinating thing to consider how being pro Bitcoin and being anti the US dollar could possibly be the most American position you could have today. Right. Like that's hard for some people to wrestle around, especially because like we've all talked about, Andrew, I don't know if you heard the podcast, but we had all talked about this previously, how bringing up Bitcoin with currently enlisted or the still continually indoctrinated veteran class, they think that being anti US dollar is being anti America. It's just, it takes some explaining, but it's like, that's just patently not true.
Yeah. It's a tough one because on the one hand you have, if the US dollar didn't have the value it does today, then the state wouldn't be able to print, what is it, $100 billion or whatever it is at this point for a war against the Ukraine and all these BS government programs that nobody really wants. And, you know, the government wouldn't be able to metastasize and be this Leviathan like it is today. But on the other hand, it does give the United States strength in many ways.
Yeah.
So it is a tough one. It's an interesting thing, man, because so here's a prediction. If you look at the United States under the gold standard, you had, I think it was called the free banking system or something like that. But essentially it was a system where $1 for pretty much all of United States history was worth, $20 was worth 1 ounce of gold. And you'd have different banks have their own bank notes. Okay. So you could literally take a banknote at the time, go into the bank, and then redeem it for an ounce of gold, or 20 banknotes for an ounce of gold. And if your bank was being too mischievous with that, and if they were participating in loaning out more than they actually had in the vault, you would have a run on the banks, and everybody would go to that bank and try and get the gold, right? And that's obviously not what you have today, but where I'm getting at with this is I think a similar thing may happen with Bitcoin. And Hal Finney actually talked about this back in, I think it was 2010. Hal Finney talked about how he believed that the future of Bitcoin is going to be between interbank settlement, and banks are going to issue their own notes that are redeemable in Bitcoin. And the on-chain layer of Bitcoin is primarily going to be between banks. And I wouldn't even mind a world like that. I think it would be a hell of a lot better than it is right now. And we'd be going back to this old monetary system that America used to have, where people could redeem their paper currency for actual money, which was gold. So I think that's pretty likely to happen.
I agree with you. I actually wrote a couple articles saying that Bitcoin will actually allow for some fiat currencies to continue to stay alive in a system like that.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind if the United States dollar continued, but if it was backed off of Bitcoin, and to probably a lot of people who would hear this statement of the United States dollar being backed off Bitcoin, it seems like a crazy thing to say, but I think it's very likely for something like that to happen.
you know, with the liquidity that's about to come into the space, you're not wrong. But Thomas Jefferson, you know, reading his quotes here, he was definitely a Bitcoiner. He just didn't know it yet. one of the better ones he's got up here, and I saw McLovin post one too. I'll get to that one. But it says, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on a continent their fathers conquered. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. It sounds just like Bitcoin. I mean, literally.
Sounds exactly like what's happening right now. People can't afford homes.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, all of that has come true. Like, there are literally, there's entire generations now. You know, my generation especially, I was born in 1980, so we just come off the gold standard. So, you know, from my generation on, and, you know, possibly even almost 10 years before, those generations, man, we had no idea what was coming in 1971. There are some guys that did, nobody listened to them. But the one that Mick Lovin posted on there was another great quote, is, I sincerely believe that banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies, and that the principle of spending money to be paid by posterity under the name of funding is but swindling fortuity on a large scale. Like, that guy's what a genius. I mean, this is
what a G.
I mean, 246 years ago now, like, and then some. Like, this is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they knew what could happen if we abandoned our our American deals, for sure. It's also interesting that he said it should be more dangerous than a standing army.
I mean, is he wrong, though?
You can't have a standing army the way we've got that standing army, you know, without any of this kind of stuff. You know, where you made that point where they literally have to come to you and say, hey, listen, we'd really like to fight this war, and we think this is a great idea. And, you know, like, we don't really have another choice. Our backs are up against the wall. How else are you going to get people to fund, you know, silliness, you know, like, oh, you need an F-35, you need a multi, you know, platform, you know, I don't know. It's a hole, right? And it's like, you know, we can get into conspiracy and all that kind of stuff, but I imagine a lot of that money that went towards the F-35 went towards a lot of other things, not to mention standing.
No.
Yeah, it means people would actually have to believe in the war, and they would have to believe that it's a dire threat that needed to be funded and fought for.
That's an interesting thought there. Like, if, for example, if Congress went to the American people today and said, we can't just appropriate funds for the war in Ukraine, we have to voluntarily raise the money for it. How much money do you think they'd raise?
Like 10 grand.
$2.
$2.
It would be a pittance compared to what it is. You know, it's funny is they did, I think it was up in Switzerland. They did this, science experiment, basically a civil experiment, where they started removing pieces of the government and said, hey, you know what, if you guys want this, you can fund it, you know, privately. You can basically donate, like, it's a charity. You know how many people donated? Like 5. Yeah, the number was minuscule, and everybody's like, yeah, maybe we don't need this kind of stuff. Same thing will happen here.
Yeah.
And then watch all the jobs go away. Because that's the other thing. I apologize for this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer on the conversation, but, like, on that specific point, like, the bureaucracy of the unnecessary bureaucracy that is reliant upon the fiat system. You guys should Google Stephen Brill. He wrote an article for, I think, The Atlantic back in, like, it was before 2020. It was like, maybe it was 2011 or 2019. There was a one in there somewhere. But he wrote about how, with the teachers union and the American education system and this fiat system, that, like, if bad teachers in urban environments were to get fired, they can appeal their firing and they get put up, like, on the roster for all the other teachers that got appealed, because there's a bunch of shit teachers in urban environments, apparently. And this line got so long that the prior system of agreements that were set up beforehand, made it so that government employment is to be treated like private property. So you can't just remove it. Like, there has to be justification for it. And so these teachers would get fired. They would appeal it. They would get put into the system, and they would have to wait for their court date, which could be anywhere from months to years. This entire time they're getting paid for by the taxpayer because they're maintaining their salary still while doing nothing. He found literal what he called rubber rooms, where teachers were just being paid to sit in these rooms and do nothing. Some of them were day trading. Some of them were literally sleeping. Like, you do whatever you want in a room, right? They're getting all this payment, and then they get to this court date, and then most of them would just, like, the court would just be like, oh, yeah, like, according to this, like, whatever act or bill that was passed, like, we can't just remove your employment. So they throw them back into the education system. And so, like, you're taking bad teachers, you're paying them for a couple years because you tried to fire them, you technically can't, and the system throws them back into the system to continue being bad teachers.
I guess that's what happens when you have the same organization that runs the DMV also on education. It's fucking nuts, man.
Yeah.
Super point. Oh man, so we're into the last 10 minutes of the show. If you're out there and you've held your questions until now, I think you're probably gonna get them missed, but we appreciate everybody joining us. We're gonna kind of go around the horn here, get some parting thoughts, and you know, see where we go from there.
All right, I'll go first since I like to talk. Andrew, it's been a lot of fun having you on, man. If you want to come back in the future, I think we would all agree as far as like having you riff with us, because I think there's a lot of conspiracy theory rabbit holes we could probably all go down in attempts to get more of our episodes taken off of YouTube. It seems to be a goal of ours at this point. But if I could just ask you one last question while we're doing this around the horn thing. We're in the middle of a macro environment that Bitcoin has never seen before. We're in the middle of a bear market. What has you bullish?
What has me bullish? I'm gonna plug a website we made, actually. So this is probably my number one answer. We made a website called theyownbitcoin.com, and basically it shows a list of notable people who own Bitcoin. So there are a lot of very compelling names on there. There's, you know, co-founder of Apple, CEO of Apple, former CEO of Google, co-founder of LinkedIn, former president of PayPal, just tons of different names of people that probably know more about money and finance than anybody listening to this show. And they all
George Soros. Wow.
George Soros has a fund which partially invested in Bitcoin, believe it or not. Yeah,
I can't stand
George Soros, but Bitcoin is for enemies, right? Like, you know, if you want something to be money, then everybody has to use that thing as money. So, and they have to have incentives to use it as money. So, I guess that would be my short answer. And then, you know, just in general, it's like, to me, it just seems pretty clear. I mean, if having a form of money which is borderless, has a cap supply, can't be censored, all these different aspects, I don't see how something like that is not valuable.
Good answer. And I did not know about this website. This website's pretty cool, dude.
Yeah, check it out. Theyownbitcoin.com.
This list is long. Holy crap. Well, that's a solid answer.
Oh, yeah.
Dave, Alex?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for being here, man. As soon as we're done, I'm going to run out and grab a pack of smokes. I feel kind of foolish for ever quitting in the first place.
So happy to hear that.
Like, what the hell, man? I've been wasting my life. But, no, man, thanks for being here. I guess my question would be, you know, if you could go back, and talk to people that are, you know, that are in the military right now, that are still on, you know, they're not in a place where they've woken up yet. What message would you bring to them, to bring them to a place to at least open up the door, you know, to crack that door and let a little bit of light in with them? How would you approach that conversation with somebody in that situation? 'Cause we've got millions of our brothers and sisters in the military right now, and they're not always going to be, and they're going to be joining us out here. at some point. And I mean, what would you say to them? How would you approach that conversation?
It's a difficult question because I think a lot of people in the military are still in there because they refuse to see what's actually going on. And that, friends of mine included, like I have friends who just love shooting guns and jumping out of planes and they love experiencing the suck. Right. And that's just their life. Like they don't think much more about it. And I honestly understand that because it's,
yep.
You're not sitting at a desk. You're not, it's just kind of lifestyle that you're not going to experience anywhere else. But I guess maybe my answer would be, okay, well, why are you doing all of that? You know, so it's one thing to do all that stuff and actually help people. But what if you're not helping the American people? I mean, who are you at that point?
Yep.
Right. So, man, I guess that's one thing I should say. I mean, I could try and share a bunch of different conspiracies on from their perspective on what might wake somebody up, right? But that's the ultimate question is, are you actually benefiting the American people? And if the answer is no, then who are you benefiting? And you shouldn't. Yeah. Well,
so. Man, and that's a hell of a question right there, man. You know, I mean, because if you're not benefiting the American people, then who are you benefiting? Yeah. And I think that's powerful stuff right there, man. Because you're benefiting somebody, you know, and it's like you said in your post yesterday, you know, they go after people for their willingness to serve and their willingness to live an adventurous life and to get out there and to be a part of something bigger and to serve humanity and all that. And it's just not the reality that actually happens. I think that's the perfect question is, you know, who are you actually serving right now? Who are you benefiting by doing what you're doing? Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I really just want to know, man, because those are the conversations that I'm preparing myself to have with people that are in those various situations. Yeah, that's awesome, man. Thank you for that.
All right. I'm just going to say it's been great, man. Thanks for being here, Andrew. Thanks for what you've done. Thanks for the stories. Appreciate it all. And for those of you who are out there and are either active duty or are veterans, first responders, whatever the case may be, if they're Bitcoin curious, get them around the group.
Bitcoin curious.
Hey, man, that's the thing. We've got a cure for that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Takes me back to the South Park days.
Oh, yeah, Lord.
We used to talk about Liberty Curious on one of my old shows, and so bumper sticker. If you're out there in the crowd, CoinFather and the rest of you guys that are doing amazing things in the Bitcoin Veterans chat, Bitcoin Curious, make it, I don't know, as homoerotic as you guys want to. It's that kind of show, right? So why not? Andrew, man, it has been really cool to reconnect with you. I'm looking forward to when you're back here in the States. You got an open invite to North Georgia, man. Doing some stuff up here when you get a chance. And Mike's been here, Alex has been out, Gabe's probably on his way this fall, hopefully, and Jordan will be down here at some point. So just wanted to say thank you first and foremost for speaking out, for drawing, you know, that line in the sand, standing your ground, just being a real role model. You know, some guy who's really walking the walk. And I mean, it takes a lot to do what you've done to stand up and face your peers and your commanding officers and staff and everything else, to just get treated like a bag of shit from, you know, months prior when you're, you know, a hero for running, you know, these ridiculous races that they put on. So I think the world needs a lot more guys that are flippant and flying in the face of these people out there that, you know, want to use you and, you know, as an asset and then, you know, throw you away as a liability. And so thanks for doing everything you have, man. And good luck to you. If we can help you in any way, go ahead and, you know, besides that, you know, website, you plug whatever you like here at the end of the show, and then we'll wrap it up.
Cool. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. And yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I guess I'll just plug my Twitter. I'm also a Noster, but Twitter is Andrew_J_Howard. And company I work at and partially own is Bitcoin Reserve. So I guess those would be my two things. So yeah, appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. Everybody else, Mike, Alex, Gabe, thanks for being here. Jordan, I don't know what you're doing, scheduling shit with family. Okay, on
bourbon night again.
Podcast night, for God's sakes, being a family man. That's not what this is about. But thank you all again for being here. Everybody that's out there, go like, smash the subscribe button, get notifications for when you're going live. Should be more consistent coming up Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Thanks again for everything you guys are doing out there. This community is getting a life of itself. If you can bring a battle buddy next time, bring a battle buddy, bring a beer, whatever you got. Until then, you know, I guess as they say, Bitcoin don't shitcoin. We'll see you later. Peace.
Peace.
Amen.